Good afternoon.
Welcome to the meeting of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, held today at the Housing Authority headquarters. And the meeting is beginning at 12:06 p.m. I'm already ahead of schedule. Okay. So, Mr. Gerber, would you please call to order, roll call?
Yes, ma'am. And today we're opening up the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, Austin Affordable Contractors PFC, Austin Affordable PFC, and the South Congress PFC. Did I get that right? Great. I'll call the roll. Commissioner Apostolo?
Present.
Commissioner Carrington?
Present.
Commissioner Ritchie?
Present.
Commissioner Boetta?
Here.
And Acting Chairman Tyra Duncan Hall?
Present.
We have a full house.
Okay. Well, let us begin with the pledges of allegiance. And Commissioner Apostol, will you lead us in?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And next, we will have public communication. Is there any public communication?
No.
Okay, no. Then we will move on to the Housing Authority presentation to SAFE.
Yes, ma'am. We are delighted today to be able to have Julia Spann representing SAFE here. The SAFE Alliance has been an incredible partner of HACA's and of many of us in this community for many years. I think it is no secret that as the SAFE Alliance has grown, there have become incredible opportunities, but also a few challenges along the way. This is a moment when community has an opportunity to step up and help our neighbors in need and to help other nonprofits that are working really hard, like the SAFE Alliance, to grow capacity. And I'm grateful that the HACA board made the decision to contribute $100,000 today to the SAFE Alliance. Julia Spann is here, who's been a hero in this community. And with the board's indulgence, I'd like to ask Julia to come up and say just a quick word or two about the current circumstance at SAFE and why these dollars are so critical. And then we'll take a picture with everybody.
Okay.
Please have a seat.
Absolutely. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me again, Julia Spann. I'm the executive director. Thank you. Oh, I always need help. I am the executive director now of the SAFE Alliance Affordable Housing Corporation, but since 1995, I was the CEO or executive director, different titles, of SAFE, which some of you know as originally the Austin Rape Crisis Center, the Center for Battered Women, and then merged with the Austin Children's Shelter and eventually became the SAFE Alliance, serving victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse over the years, sex trafficking. And as you can imagine, these are really issues that impact so very many people in our community, especially women and children, but also, of course, men who have also been hurt by this. And SAFE has had to grow over the years and grow in order to accommodate our growing community. And even though some of the issues have gotten a wee bit better, they still are very pervasive. And so we thank you very, very much from the bottoms of our heart. Dr. Pierre Berenstain is our new CEO. He asked that I read you a little letter, if I can. Your confidence in SAFE's work means a great deal, especially when survivor services are under real strain and the needs of families in our community remain urgent. This investment is an affirmation of the critical role SAFE plays in helping people move from crisis towards safety, stability, and healing. Mike had asked me some really great questions over the phone about what has led to what is some financial hardships being experienced at SAFE these days. And it really is a combination of things. We had lost a couple of major donors, but as importantly as the city is having to make very difficult decisions about the support of social services And also some of the federal funding requirements are changing and being reduced. It was a storm of proportion coming from multiple places that has caused some hardships. For the social service sector as a whole in Austin, but including at SAFE. The mayor reached out and talked to Mike about this, who called me with Sylvia, and we had a good conversation. And we are so grateful that your board has thought about supporting this group of people. We're currently building two affordable housing buildings for a total of 120 units of supportive housing. We are so fortunate to have 60 vouchers from HACA to be able to help with that. We believe that housing is violence prevention. If people don't have safe and stable homes, and the mission of your organization, we would be in really bad shape in this community. So thank you for this gift, but also thank you for your service.
Thank you.
So many of the members of our community and residents and clients that work with this agency are victims of domestic violence. Men, women, of course, but more men than we think. And so, SAFE is a really vital resource, and we're really proud to be partnered with y'all. Thanks for coming out today.
Thank
Does
you.
The board have any questions for Julia? Or?
Yeah. What does the future look like for you from a financial standpoint?
Well, you know, nonprofits are always scrappy, and really great nonprofits are super scrappy. And so you are always changing and looking for new opportunities, building new relationships, nurturing those old ones. It's really hard to predict what the situation is going to be. I think we have been in a community that's had a city that's supported social services in a way that I don't see in other cities. I came from Fort Worth many years ago, and the city did not support social services at all, and moving to Austin was mind-blowing to me that our city did so. And so I think as the city, if they're able to have another bond that passes, that would be able to provide support, that's hopeful. We HUD is changing, as y'all probably know so well, and so we're watching that very closely to see what that will mean for us. We have a good bit of HUD funding in the organizations. And we rely greatly on what's called the Victims of Crime Act funds, and that's federal funding that we've been advocating with national partners on making some fixes to that formula, because it's been sort of made available to things that are not specifically for victims of crime, trying to get that back on track. So it's a little uncertain, to tell you the truth. We happen to be in a community that likes us and supports this mission, and so our philanthropic support is strong. Thanks for asking.
Why don't we get a picture between the flags, if you don't mind?
Awesome.
I think Sylvia's got a nice... Oh, yeah. A mock-up check here. The real one, to avoid any cybersecurity issues, is being sent by ACH, right, Barbara?
Yes.
Our CFO. Here, Julie, we'll let you hold that. Commissioner Dunham, I'll let you come over side here. And we'll bring Barbara jump in the commissioners in the middle.
This is such a great group that I told Mike I want to join his board. Yes, I remember my first visit to you.
All right. 3, 2, a couple more. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for this. I know it's always a hard decision. There's no lacking in the use of important funds.
But I want to press one thing. This is not a hard decision.
Don't cast that all in one place, Julia.
Pardon me?
Take it said, don't cash that in all in one place. Good, good, good. Take care. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Let us move on. And the next item is going to be the report from the Citywide Advisory Board. And Lupe Garcia is here with us. Again, Lupe.
Thank you so much, everyone. Once again, nice to see everybody. The Citywide Board meeting minutes for HACA Board, May 12, 2026, at 10:30. On behalf of Lupe Garcia, Veronica Castillo-Perez, Citywide Vice President, call the meeting to order at 10:37 a.m. Veronica Castillo-Perez read the minutes from April Citywide Board meeting. The treasurer balance is $4,000. Presentations was Michael Roth, Vice President of PAMI. This is a good time to take the time for spring cleaning. The Good Neighbor Ambassador Program is an effective way for residents to communicate property needs, street life replacements, and fallen trees and on streets impacted by the recent heavy storms. Austin Pathways Updates, Lilana Villegas, Senior Director of Community Development. There is a new HACA resident emergency flyer in English and in Spanish that lists the important local phone numbers. This information will be distributed at Mayfest, One Voice, and Resident Council meetings. Resident Council officers should have a community emergency plan and a separate family emergency plan with contacts in case of a fire or extended power outage. Donna McGreen, Youth Education and FSS Manager. 48 HACA Resident Scholarships recipients will be awarded this year. Last year, awarded 39. The newest Family Sufficient Coach is Mercedes Lee, who will be managing Rosewood and Santa Rita. James Carter, Workforce Development and Digital Inclusion Updates. This is the final week for ACC interns. A new court will be in the fall. We are very excited for the ACC students who are graduating in May. Bromley Health and Wellness Manager. The Central Texas Food Bank will be delivering 100 boxes of food to residents 55 and over. Diabetes education will begin the six-week series at Meadowbrook. Nutrition and physical activities classes will begin next week at Coronado and Goodrich. The weekly exercise classes will continue at Lakeside, Gaston, North Loop, and Chalmers. Sandra Wiston, Community Event Specialist, Mayfest Health and Wellness Fair is Friday, May 15 at 10 a.m. at Doris Miller. We hope that everyone can join us. This year's Mayfest goes west, so please join us in wearing your favorite cowboy hats and cowgirl attire.
And you looked very good in yours, by the way.
Yes. And did everyone dress accordingly?
Of course.
Very good.
We did.
Okay. Chalmers resident. Chalmers.
That's embarrassing. Could you put up the pictures real quick? Sorry, go ahead.
I was the one on the horse. Chalmers resident shared that they had a wonderful Cinco de Mayo and Mother's Day celebration. Santa Rita and Rosewood Resident Council residents are interested in continuing the sewing class in partnership with IMOMS. The meeting was adjourned. Beverly Arnold, President of Chalmers, made a motion to adjourn the meeting. Carmen Rojas, Vice President of Rosewood, seconded the motion. Meeting adjourned at 11:19 a.m.
Very good. Any questions for Lupe? As always, thank you very much for a very thorough report.
Thank you.
Leilani, thank you as well. Okay, our next item is going to be Employee of the Third Quarter.
We're very excited by the Employee of the Third Quarter. As you know, in recent years, we honor team members who are making a difference all across the enterprise. But in recent months, some of the most challenging work we've done has been really in technology improvements, strengthening our technology platforms, and really making sure that that our staff and team and our residents have the tools that they need to be as successful and as productive as they can be, which means that TMI in particular has to hit on all cylinders. Our technology management and innovation area, which is headed up by Jorge, has done a tremendous job in really working to sort of lift up all boats, and it's challenging, especially someone who's not for whom technology doesn't come easily to. And there's a lot of folks in this building, I'm sure that surprises you, that are not, you know, easy about, you know, adopting new technology. But there have been a number of people within TMI who have made a huge difference, and one in particular has made a really big difference to so many of our team members. Funmi Awolowo has been did I pronounce that correctly? Did I? Thank you. I appreciate that. Funmi is just a joy to work with, and has, while only being here for a year, has really, as I tell her when I see her in the hallway, you know, in such a short period of time, she's become the most popular person in the place. Everybody really counts on her to make sure that they can be successful using all the new software and with all the hardware changes and with all the movement that's been happening in the building, as so many of us have moved from the second floor to the first to the second floor to the third floor or to other places working remotely. It's just been a very, very challenging period, and FundMe has really exemplified the best of what, you know, providing help and customer service really, really looks like. And so we're honored that she is our employee of the quarter for this quarter. Before we give her certificate, and just to make her blush a little bit more, I wanted Jorge to have just a second to say a word or two.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Yes, I'm very proud of Funmi. Like Mike said, you know, she's been with us for a year and she's caught up. You know, she's been wonderful. She's been a great addition to my team. I'm very grateful for the work that she's doing along with the rest of my team, right? So I do have a great team. I'm blessed with that. So Funmi, congratulations, well deserved, and keep up the good work.
Well, why don't we, if commissioners, if you don't mind getting up again, we'll go take pictures with Funmi. The Haka calisthenics will continue. Or could you present this to Funmi, and we'll put the commissioners around you. And most importantly, this is the extra day off, so there you go. So don't feel like you're stuck having to stay for the rest of the board meeting. You know? Not like the rest of us.
Get out while you can.
Congrats again. So, commissioners, we normally have not done this, but for today, we took the liberty of creating a little bit of a cheat sheet that you all have, just so you all know what the order of the day's events are going to be. We do need to have a fairly significant executive session today. So we're going to cover the first three items on the HACA agenda, which I think we should dispatch with fairly quickly. And then Commissioner Carrington will take over as chair, and we'll go to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation and take on those items. And then we'll go on to Austin Affordable Contractors PFC and take on those items. And then we'll go to Austin, then we'll go to, by, at 1 o'clock, we'd like to be at South Congress PFC to take on what I think is really a wonderful project at St. John's. And then we will go back to the main HACA agenda under Chairman Duncan Hall's leadership and ratify everything at the main HACA level. So our hope is, again, to get through these items now, get all the way up to South Congress PFC by 1 o'clock. So there's a bit to work through. So with that said, Commissioner Chairman Duncan Hall, I'd like to turn to the consent items on the main HACA agenda. The two items that are on that agenda are item one, the approval of the board minutes from March 17th, and then the second item, which is a resolution 2945 approving a contract for roof replacement at Salina Apartments, which is a fairly typical thing that the board has seen. If there's no questions about either of those items, we ask for a motion to approve.
So move.
Second.
Carrington moves.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It's passed unanimously.
Commissioner Ritchie? Is he still on?
He's on.
Yeah, aye.
Aye, great. We'll then turn to item number three, which is the action discussion and possible action regarding resolution 2947. As Laura Bodai comes forward, we'll ask for your approval of a resolution to approve the fiscal year 2025-2026 Section 8 Management Assessment Program Certification. This is an annual certification that we do as part of the administration of our Section 8 program. And Laura, you want to walk through that real quick?
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Commissioners, guests, fellow HACA staff. My name is Laura Bodai. I am Vice President of the Assisted Housing Department. I'm here today to request approval of the submission of the fiscal year 2025-2026 Section 8 Management Assessment Program, or CMAP, as we call it, certification to HUD. So CMAP, in general, summary, is HUD's annual performance review for our Housing Choice Voucher program. It evaluates how well we administer federal rental assistance across 13 required indicators covering financial management, program integrity, leasing, inspections, and family eligibility. HUD assigns a numeric score, and agencies scoring 90% or higher are designated as high performers. For many consecutive years, including this year, we have exceeded that threshold. For this certification year, I am proud to report that we have earned full points on all required CMAP indicators, a total score of 100%, which qualifies us as a high performer under HUD standards again. And this reflects strong internal controls, compliance, and program outcomes. HUD also includes an optional 5-point bonus indicator. We are still finalizing a review of the bonus scoring. That review does not affect our required score or high performer designation. Today's action is procedural but required. So the board's approval authorizes the submission of the CMAP certification to HUD, as reflected in the board action request and resolution in your board books. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, any questions for Laura?
Question. Mm-hmm. Laura, so right now we're at 100, possibly 105. Does going up to 105 get us anything additional other than bragging rights?
No, it does not. Bragging rights are worth something. But it's actually 4%. It is 5 points, but it would be 4%, so bring us up to 104%, because there's, I believe, all 13 are 135 points, so it's not every point is a percentage point. But, yeah, it brings us up to that 104% that we're familiar with.
Really, from a matter of funding, or no difference between 100 and 104?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Actually, there's no difference like over a 90, because you're still viewed as a high performer. But we've, for now 20 some odd years, we've taken it very seriously to try to get the 100, because it's a sign of, you know, strong management in the operations of our Section 8 program.
Mm-hmm.
The 4% comes if you've moved enough folks using your voucher program to areas of higher opportunity, which is possible when you're actually issuing, but for the last year, we haven't issued any new vouchers. And any vouchers that we are issuing are the project-based ones, and almost all of them are going to projects in the city for transitioning homeless. And so it's the total right thing. I don't know if we'll get those 4 points, those additional 4 points this year,
right,
or not, but there's some, it looked like we were earlier today, but it sounds like there's some more analysis to be done, and we want to get that right.
So I want to look at the numbers a little closer before reporting out on that, yeah.
So it'll either be 100 or 104. But
right.
On the management side, it's solid. And from a deconcentration standpoint, we still feel pretty good about where we are. People are moving into.
We made strides in that direction.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm proud of the staff. It's great work they accomplish.
Well, and the vouchers that we're issuing in AAHC's portfolio, I mean, that I imagine has been very helpful in the deconcentration efforts.
Absolutely. Residents being able to move out to, you know, places that have great schools and great jobs. Mm-hmm. That's a win.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. If there are no further questions, I would ask approval for resolution number 02947.
Yes.
Second.
Second.
Board of Seconds.
Board of Seconds. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Just again confirming with Commissioner Ritchie.
Aye.
Aye. Great. Thank you. Commissioners, we'll now turn to the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation agenda, and I know Ron and Suzanne and others will come forward, and we'll turn it over to Chair Carrington.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. The meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation has been called to order. A quorum has been established. Is there any public communication?
No.
No. No public communication?
Okay.
Then the first item is the consent agenda, which was the board meeting held on March the 17th, 2026. Hear a motion?
I move approval.
Thank you. Second? Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I actually just saw a potential error. I want to make sure. So here we have March consent meeting for March 17th. If I'm not mistaken, here on the meeting minutes, it says 8.6.
Oh.
Is that
wrong?
Is that
today?
Never mind. I'm sorry. I'm not.
Apologize. Of doors.
Okay.
Any other comments, questions? Okay. If not, then we will move to the first action item for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation, and this is item number 2, and it is to approve resolution 00292 for actions necessary to culminate the transaction for the bridge at Eastside, which consists of multifamily housing units, calls AAHC Limited Partnership to own the development, and cause the owner to enter into financing for the acquisition. And then number 4, cause AAHC under the owner to execute any such further documentation as necessary to culminate the transaction. Okay, with that, Mr. Kowal.
Thank you. Thank you, commissioners, staff, guests. Ron Kowal, Vice President, Asset Management, Housing Development. Excited to be here today. It's going to be an interesting long day today, so. Looking forward to spending some time with y'all. Very happy to bring this property to you all for potential approval. I think you've heard us talk a little bit about how we've been very careful in selecting what we're trying to purchase that not only has a need for some affordable component in it, but also in very good high opportunity areas where it's very troubling and very hard to find affordable housing. This property called, which will, if we successfully pass this, will be, it's at Amley Eastside now. We call the Bridge at Eastside. It's a 290-unit multifamily property. It's right on, if you look on your screen, you can see it's right there on the east side of I-35 and 11th. If you are unfamiliar with that, just think where Franklin's Barbecue is, and then you'll know exactly where the property is. So, it's very close, right across the street. So, what was exciting about this when we had the opportunity to enter into this deal, is that we really don't have an asset in this close to the CBD. And there's so many new projects and new developments going on downtown where rents are just accelerating and people are moving in as quickly as possible. Occupancy is incredibly strong, despite the market we're in, and rents are incredibly high. We had this property looked at maybe a year ago when it came out on the market the first time. It was well north of $100 million when it came out on the market. It was rejected by the markets. They came back about 8 months later and asked if we would be interested. There was a whisper number in the mid-90s. We were very successful in settling for a purchase price of $88,750,000. So from the value standpoint, it was a very, very strong opportunity for us from the value side. This property has 182 one-bedroom, one-baths, 100 two-bedroom, two-baths, and 6 two-bedroom, two-and-a-half-baths. Pretty large. The 6 units are pretty large at 1,769 square feet. not much affordability here. I'm going to be honest with you. We're in the process of our lease audit. We've determined only 81 of the 290 units meet the affordable requirements that we would ask for. We're still short about 87 units that we're still waiting to verify that had no income in the files, and so we'll verify those tenants as we go along. So there's a lot of room here for improvement to add affordability.
That's because we have to get 50% of the units at 80%.
51 below. And 51 and 80 below. But this one will have a minimum requirement of 10% at 60 and 40% at 80.
But to meet the state law, meet for the state tax law. Exemption, you have to.
That's
have
correct. 50% at 80. And so what we do here is we take a first in approach. Like all vacant units as they turn will then be leased to affordable housing.
How long do you think that might take?
Depends. The way the Austin market's going now, we think this is going to be pretty accelerated. It's all going to be depend on turnover, lease turnover. We're 95% occupied, I think, right now. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty strong occupancy. But as the word gets out, I think there's so much opportunity here at retail on 11th Street, on 5th Street, all those restaurants and service sectors, the bars. You have downtown Austin population. This is a population that really works downtown and wants to be downtown and stays downtown. We don't have a good demographic snapshot of it yet, but from looking at it from the surface, we don't have a lot of families there, which is not unusual at this location to be. That doesn't surprise us.
I remember reading an article not too long ago about the transition in East Austin. They say there are more dogs in East Austin than children.
Yes. There's a large, I will tell you for firsthand, there's a large, from walking this multiple times, there's a large population of animals here. But it's a great property. It sits on 4.5 acres, so it's a big tract. Great location, very central to walk. It's got a walkable score of over 90 to get to downtown. It's got a strong bike paths. We're close to the Sutil Plaza, the rail station. So it's got a lot of things to offer. This is a partnership we'll do with Belveron again, and it'll be our 24th acquisition with them. And again, they've proven to be a very strong partner of ours. I will say that every deal I've brought to you has been a minimum of 50% below 80% AMI, and we don't have a single asset that's not has units that are 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s over the course of the portfolio. And in a very short period of time, down in a couple months or so, I'm really excited to share some data with you that we're working on. That's for another topic. And so we've got some proof in the pudding. So, again, there's some financial requirements here. This is a very expensive property, even though we got it at a nice discount. I will tell you that to get to 10% at 60 and 40% at 80 minimum, the rent reduction on the property per year is $1.24 million. So we'll be dropping the rents at that much into your bottom line in order to meet those affordability requirements. So it's a very, very deep, when we do a 50% test, we talk about the 50% test. This is well over 60, almost 65% of the exemption that we would maintain. Offset by the rent reductions of, mm-hmm. So it's a very, very high, obviously it should be because it's a downtown asset. Mm-hmm.
So just to be clear, of the 290 units,
mm-hmm.
the 145 that are in the affordable side of this mm-hmm. are going to see pretty substantial rent reductions.
Yes, sir.
At those rents. And,
well, over 1.2 million.
And as units turn to fill those units, there's going to be a pretty aggressive affirmative marketing plan reaching out to folks in the surrounding. Throughout.
Huge. You'll be canvassing, walking, flyers. It'll be
church across the street.
Everything will be. Everybody will be hit. AMP will be managing this. They've done this for us multiple times. They know the drill. It's kind of like it's going to be a similar rollout like we did with the Kinsey when we bought that in Domain. There was no affordable component in the Domain, and once the word got out, it took us about a month, and then boom. I mean, everybody started running looking for affordable units. So. I suspect this will be the same here as well.
And you will keep us posted on when that magic number occurs, right?
Oh, I plan on giving you updates on all our portfolio that so you realize, and even the ones we've closed recently and where we are in terms of lease up. Mm-hmm. I will say some of the outliers where there's more affordability already out there, it's very hard because, you know, everybody can get an affordable unit in certain submarkets. Right. In this submarket of downtown CBD, they just don't exist. And there's some very small density bonus. 10% of the units have to be affordable, and they've been able to figure ways to maneuver themselves around that to where they can skirt that even in different ways, some of the developers. So I suspect this will change really quick. Last thing I wanted to tell you, though, that 83% or 240 of those units have been completely turned and renovated because this was built in 2008. Mm-hmm. And when I walked into the unturned units, they didn't need to be turned. The turned units are really, really nice. And so there's minimal maintenance and long-term CapEx that we don't have to worry about here, especially on the insides. So we're very, very pleased with the condition of the property and fortunate that we were able to pull this one off. So we're happy, hopefully.
Quite remarkable.
We're very excited about it.
And just to be clear, Ryan, we can't claim, they can't, no one can claim the tax exemption until you hit the 50% and below. I mean, so from an investor standpoint and for everyone involved in this, getting to 50% of those units being at 80% below is vital. So there's going to be a lot of effort to,
it's critical.
To do outreach.
Yes.
Yeah, the deal doesn't work, and it's not compliant with state law.
It wouldn't be compliant. And you're starting to see those laws change. We've talked about multiple mm-hmm. times, and you'll hear more about that. The compliance and the audits and the timing and the timelines are going to get tighter and tighter and tighter. Which is fair, which is fine. You know, we'll work within those parameters, but you know, they know who we are, and this is why I'm comfortable partnering. They know the mission, and I'm very comfortable with us meeting that. Again, this will be a Fannie Mae loan, which has been difficult using the agencies, you know, in this market as well. But we think we've done a pretty good job there, and really, it's all already wrapped up, ready to go. So hopefully, you all will approve this, and then we can get to the closing table and start putting some downtown affordability out there.
Okay, I move approval.
Any questions?
Can I ask one question?
Yeah, I want to open for questions.
Okay.
Yes, Barbara.
So for the individuals that are currently living there, when their lease expires, mm-hmm. are they able to renew?
Absolutely.
Or even if they don't fit the income eligibility?
We won't displace even market renters who want us to stay and renew their leases there. So we'll only take vacancies and then those that give us notices to vacate and actually move out. Yes. We're not going to kick anyone out on the market side to get to the affordable side. The income's important too because we've got to pay the bills.
Right. And then until the tax exemption threshold is met, what is the tax burden for this property?
It is tax exempt from day one, so there is no property tax once we've closed. So where you could get into trouble is you can lose your exemption if you're lagging behind. And the current legislation of 392 doesn't give you a timeline. It's very, very gray. We've always used a term of 1 year at the max on the outside to get to where we wanted to be. We've seemed to have met that, you know, pretty easily across our portfolio. Those timelines aren't all going to change in the new legislative period, but it will be tax exempt from day one. Okay. So I think there was a little confusion about it. We're not paying a percentage of the taxes. Well, there's where we're leasing up. It's 100% exempt when at closing.
And the property would be subject to an annual audit.
Yes.
To ensure that and to, as part of the justification of the credit.
We will have our 2025 audits for all our portfolios done by June 1. So in 2 weeks, we'll have those all completed. So we do those once a year. New legislation may mandate third-party audits, instead of manually our management team, compliance team doing those. Just more expense.
Who pays for those third person?
The property will have to pay for them. And Suzanne, what are they averaging on the 394?
$10,000 to $12,000,
which is another hit that they're throwing on the apartment, on the property. But right now, our management team, compliance team, does that in house.
Any other questions or comments for Ron? I have one question.
Yes.
So I would assume that you all have a chart or a spreadsheet that shows when these units, when the leases are up on these units.
Yes.
So you're tracking it that way.
Yes, 60 days in advance is the apartment tracker, but when we do our original lease audit, we look at an initial lease up as to the entire turn for the next 12 months.
Okay. So you know how many are going to come up that potentially can become affordable units.
Yes, ma'am. That's absolutely. Okay. And again, while I think it'll be quicker than normal, the turnover rate isn't as great here as it is in other places because people love living there, and it is substantially less of a market rent than what the new properties are bringing on. You know, some one bedrooms are renting for over $4,200 a month right now on the new side, and we're in the 23s, 24s. So. And those will substantially be down. But, yes, we do have a schedule. Mm-hmm. That was part of our lease audit.
All right. Any other questions or comments?
I would just comment that I think that jaws are going to drop when people know that Austin Affordable Housing Corporation and Bell Braun have acquired this and that so much of it's going to be affordable. That's a huge win, and it's so close to the urban core that, there aren't many properties that we can point to and say that's affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing with this tool, the 392 tool.
Yep.
So it's really exciting and a great pickup, Ron.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
I move approval. Yeah. Second time.
00-00292. Second. Thank you. Any more comments, questions? Do we have a vote?
Aye.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you all. The next one for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is item 3, which is resolution 00294. And this is for actions related to the bridge at South Point. So, Ron?
Mm-hmm. Welcome again. Most of you, not Commissioner Moetta, you weren't part of this in 2016 when the board approved the purchase of the bridge at South Point. This is a property that we bought. It's just wholly owned, 100% owned by Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. So we don't have a partner in this deal. It's actually located, if you all are familiar, at William Cannon and I-35, where the academy is. There's an old academy there. This sits right in front of the academy. It used to be called the Oslo. And then we changed it to the bridge at South Point. We've owned this for approximately almost 10 years to the day. And when we originally did our 30-year loan with Fannie Mae, it had a 10-year call, so the note is now being called to be paid off. As we went through the process of refinancing, as I talk about the difficulties with Fannie and Freddie, this property if we would have gone traditional financing at this point in time, we were probably shy about $3.5 million to pay off the debt for what proceeds we can get on a new loan based on rents, based on concessions, based on times and interest rates. So what we're asking you here today, before I go with that, let me tell you a little bit because I think it's important. This is 176 units. It's not a very big property, but it serves a very neat purpose in our portfolio. And we just got done talking about a high opportunity where our affordable units are at 60 and 80%. And I wanted to share with you the demographics of this one very quickly. Of the 176 units, we've got 20. Let's see, we've got 29 at 30%, 29 at 40%, 34 at 50%, 18 at 60, 20 at 80, and we only have 11 units that are over 80% AMI in this property.
Could you run through those again?
29 at 30, mm-hmm. 29 at 40, 34 at 50, 18 at 60, 20 at 80, and 11 units above 80% AMI. Okay. We also have
market rent.
Okay. We also have 6 vouchers there as well that we're currently housing. So it's a very highly affordable property for us. But when you look at financing and you look at rents and underwriting, you know, it takes away a little bit of the proceeds because of how deep the affordability is there. So what we're asking you to do today is we're using our local bank, Horizon Bank, who holds a substantial amount of HACA's revenue as well, and we ask them to do a short-term six-month bridge loan to get us to pay the loan off because it has to be paid on May 26th. I put in the resolution not to exceed $13 million. The debt is about $11,670,000, something like that. So it'll be probably a $12 million bridge loan. Mm-hmm. It'll be an interest-only loan at 6.75% interest. Mm-hmm. In the next 2 months, I plan on bringing to you another plan of how we'll permanently finance this, which will get us out of the bridge loan. Mm-hmm. And I'll plan on sharing that with you probably in July. But we felt that, you know, the option of bringing that much amount of cash to close on this loan was not a very good idea. Plus, we need a little bit of a renovation CapEx expense as well. So the plan we're going to be bringing you forward to, you know, once we're into this bridge loan, we'll explain a little bit more of that to you. Great asset to keep. It really serves a big affordable component. We also have a tax credit property right behind it that Suzanne's portfolio called Urban Oaks, which is 100% of those units are at 60% and below. Mm-hmm. So its fence line is really basically backs. We share a fence together.
Oh, right. Can you zoom in a little closer?
Yeah.
So this is Bridget Southpoint.
Yep.
This is Urban Oaks
that
we did with Ryan Companies.
Yep.
And then if you go out just a little bit more, we actually own this piece of property that this section here, we bought this from the church that goes out to William Cannon. So there's been questions about sort of what to also do with this sort of narrow strip here as well. We've kind of played around with, could we do some kind of a small school or something?
Yes.
Of support to the residents that are there. But there's a lot kind of at that corner that we have a lot of equity sort of in that space.
And you know, our thought process too, and we've had some success with this, is residents that can't qualify for a 60% unit that want to stay in that area. Now we have a sister property that we can, if they over income or they over qualify, we can move them into South Point. Mm-hmm. It's a little older, obviously an older asset. And so we want to do a little, it was built in 84, so we want to do a little bit of brush up when we do the refinance, the permanent refi, which we'll share with you in a couple months. But I think you'll be pleased with the plan we're putting together.
Most of these properties are what, within a half mile to a mile of each other, all of them?
These two?
Yeah. No. What Mike was pointing out.
Yes.
The properties that are in the same area.
Well, these two just have to be right.
Those are adjacent.
Correct.
And there are other areas, like when we go out towards Valente, we have a small grouping of properties. If you go down towards South Park Meadows.
Correct.
We have
all four corners.
I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the geographical area for all those properties?
We're pretty spread out. I mean, as you can sort of see on the bigger map.
Okay.
And part of that was intentional, sort of all trying to be in all parts of town with all different types of products.
Right.
So it's interesting, like at this particular section here, that's kind of William Cannon and I-35, mm-hmm. kind of zoom going over to South Congress or Circle S.
Mm-hmm.
You've got voucher residents who are choosing to live at the newer property, the bond 4% property.
Yes.
So there's 45, 46 resident voucher holders.
That's correct.
At Urban Oaks. Mm-hmm. But the older property is meeting sort of this naturally occurring affordability need that's here. With only six vouchers.
Right.
So people are choosing the product that they want to live in that works best for their
yes.
families.
Mm-hmm. And we really want to, make this a nice asset for us. And I think it's important that things that we own, that we take responsibility for, we need to keep in good shape and good condition. And so the plan that I'll bring back to you in the near future will address those needs. I'll share more about that with you.
Yeah. It raises a question that I have had. And we have all just been very anxious to get voucher holders into our properties now, rather than having them to go out and look for themselves, et cetera. How do we have any sense of how many people who are with vouchers trying to move into properties, able to move into those that we own in comparison to what they were 5 years ago, let's say?
I don't know if I can answer that off the top of my head. One of the problems we have, we're not issuing new vouchers, so what we're seeing is we're circulating the same voucher holders that are wanting to move. And honestly, if you look at the timelines, for instance, I was going to share with you the average stay of our residents at South Point is 4.7 years. Mm. So they're comfortable, it's affordable, they don't want to get out of there, and they stay. Mm-hmm. But that's a data point we can probably look at, because we have tracked we track our voucher holders, you know, as well, and I could work with Laura maybe too.
But our properties are housing, you know, roughly a quarter of our total voucher number
population.
To, you know, of the vouchers that we have issued, you know, if not a bit more, in the AHC portfolio. Mm-hmm. But it's but the housing choice voucher with the big emphasis on the word choice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you know and there's a lot of great landlords that are out there that are accepting vouchers.
Especially in a market when you're hurting for occupancy, mm-hmm. and you know these landlords are begging for monies that they can count on that will come consistently every month.
Right.
And you know they can push. Sometimes they try to push our bells and try to get a little higher FMOR than what the market's bearing. And I know we do a really good job of pushing back, but. Mm-hmm. So in this kind of this timing, there's more acceptance to the vouchers citywide than there are in which I perceive is going to happen in the next 24 months when this market really, really flips. Mm-hmm. So.
Any more questions or comments? I have one question, Ron. Mm-hmm. So this is a 1984 asset. Mm-hmm. We've owned it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Have we been regularly putting money in for upgrades and renovations? And
we have. We did some initial upgrades when we first bought it.
Which was when?
In 2016.
Okay.
And some of that addressed roofs and some fences and some. We redid the swimming pool. We did some other repairs and maintenance on siding and things. And there were some lender required repairs that. They inspect this property every year, so we do lender requireds. We have not put in anything substantial in the last 3 or 4 years, but we haven't needed to. We've been fortunate. I think the roofs will be needing to be addressed. It'll be the first thing we'll probably do. Mm-hmm. And then we got to look at the interiors and maybe do some things in there because there's some of them that are still pretty dated right now. So I think that'll be part of the refinance plan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. So do I hear a motion that we approve 00294 for short-term bridge loan for the bridge at South Point? Mary moves.
I'll second.
Barbara seconds. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
All right. Motion passes. And with that, we will close Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 1 o'clock. Do I hear a motion?
I move.
Second? Okay. Thank you. Any opposed? Okay. So Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is closed. The next item is Austin Affordable CPF.
Contractors.
PFC. Thank you, contractors. And that is back the other way, right? Yeah. Back toward the front. So I need to call this. No, the meeting's already been called to order. No public testimony. Okay, we'll go first to our action item, which is the minutes of March the 17th, 2026. That's a consent item. Mary moves. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, and then the second consent item.
Who moved? Who seconded?
Mary.
Aye.
And then Tara.
Passed 5-2.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next the consent item is item number 2, which is resolution 0008, and that's the approval of Austin Affordable Contractors PFC bylaws as amended and adopted on March 17th, 2026.
Commissioners, this is just a clarifying item. As you know, at the last board meeting, we went through all of the bylaws and tried to align them in our effort to do that. We inadvertently, instead of putting the bylaws, had the formation document transposed in your book, and so we regret that error. Because we're so close to the name change for the Austin Housing Authority, we propose that you adopt the bylaws here, the correct bylaws, and that you have those take effect on August 1st, which will be the date that the Austin Housing Authority adopts its new name, and so it'll all align.
And no changes to the bylaws that you approved are done. This is just a clerical
that we approved last month.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions, comments before we take a motion? Okay. Do I hear a motion? All righty, Mary.
I'll second.
Barbara, second. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. With that, we will close the Austin Affordable Contractors PFC at 1:02 p.m. Hear a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Mary. Barbara, Mary, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Then we go to the South Congress PFC, which is?
You okay with me going get
to the back or the front? There it is, toward the back.
Can I go get the?
Yeah.
Okay, the meeting has been called to order. Was there any public comment, Nydia?
There's no public comment, but there probably will be. We've got a visitor from the city and a visitor from the development group who will be here, are coming in. So there will be a little bit of, give us a moment to shuffle around, but no general public comment for this item, for this agenda.
All right, so we were supposed to be here at 1 o'clock and we're at 1:03, so we did all right, huh?
Yes, ma'am. It was fantastic.
All right, so are we waiting?
They're here.
Okay, they're here. All righty. Hi there. Welcome. Have a seat.
Sit down. Right. Come on in, guys.
Hey, come on up.
Okay. We have called this meeting to order, and we are ready for any public comment.
Great. Why don't I start, unless you want to give a
story. Do you want to do a public comment on here at this point, or do you want to do it under the item? What's better?
It
doesn't really matter. Why
we'll do our presentation under the item.
Perfect.
So that's okay.
No public comments needed. Correct. So then we'll go to the commission.
We'll go on to the consent agenda, the consent items. The first one is approving the minutes of the March 17th, 2026 meeting.
I move approval.
Mary and Tyra first, Mary second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then we move to the action item, which is number 2, and that's resolution 00023, authorizing South Congress PFC to execute a number of documents related to GS St. John South LLP. Okay, now we're ready. Right, Ron?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. Very, very excited to have sitting here in front of you to talk about St. John's. It's been a long haul. I also want to say we don't have enough seats, but my right hand and leader over there, Suzanne, has been extremely involved in this project as well, and has carried a lot of the weight for many years working on this as well. So I don't want to forget her. She's been very instrumental in helping us get to the finish line. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. And she has comments. She can always join in as well. I want to introduce you a couple of our guests here today to talk about St. John's. Over here, this is Christine Frendel. She's the redevelopment project manager for the city and overseeing the project of St. John's, which started out as an RFP through the city, which we responded on. This is Ryan Leno. He's the principal with Leno Architects and Design and has just knocked it out of the park over the last years, and he'll show you a couple things what this project's going to look like. And of course, our main partner here, David Walsh. I think we got the B team because Callie's not here. And Callie's getting married this weekend, and I begged her not to get married, but she refused. Natalie didn't listen to me. Callie didn't listen to me, so she's not here. But Callie's a wonderful person, has also been part of David's team and has done yeoman's work on this project as well. I just wanted to say this was a long endeavor, and I could talk about this, but I think I'm just going to turn it straight over to the and let us walk you through the process of what we went through, a little bit, a couple slides of the design that we went through, and then David and I can talk about the deal structure. If you have Jorge, do you have the original, just the main? Let's do the Google map so they can first, and then we'll go to the slide. Okay, That's it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right where that dot is. That used to be what we all remember as the Home Depot site on I-35 up by St. John's. The city was gracious enough to go ahead and demo that for us and has cleared the site. And so it's ready for the next phase. And I can honestly tell you the neighborhood and surrounding area, everybody's very excited about this project moving forward. Just wanted to get your bearings straight so you know what we're looking at. But I know everybody was familiar with it. So with that, we'll go over to a couple slides. I'm going to share this over to Christine, and she can tell you about the history real quickly. Would you press her microphone down there, too? Just put it on green.
On green, yeah.
Yes.
There we go.
All right. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here today. This is a very long time coming, and the partnership has been great, and it's really great to see the finish line coming up so fast. So I've been asked to talk a little bit about the history of the St. John neighborhood, which has a history long before the city or Haka or Graystar got here. I did prepare some notes just because I wanted to be succinct. In the oral history of storytelling for St. John's, I'll start back in the foundation of the St. John Regular Baptist Association, which was created after the Civil War, who sought to unify black churches, uplift newly freed slaves, and provide education to the St. John residents. In 1895, the St. John Regular Baptist Association purchased more than 300 acres outside the Austin city limits on the fertile banks of Buttermilk Creek in what is now North Austin. This included roughly 100 acres of land at the site of the present-day Austin Community College, ACC campus, where the St. John encampments were held, a massive week-long annual meeting that drew tens of thousands of attendees, a tradition that still continues today at a much smaller scale within the St. John neighborhood. In the early 1900s, the St. John Regular Baptist Association established the St. John's Industrial Home for Black Orphans to care for and educate children, which became a major anchor for the St. John neighborhood. You can see that up in the top left there, and the historic marker still exists within the neighborhood. The St. John community continued to thrive through the end of the 19th century and the first part of the 20th century, as pieces of the 300 acres were sold to black former sharecroppers who were able to build homes and further establish the St. John neighborhood. The 1920s began a slow decline for the St. John community. The rise of Jim Crow in the South and Austin's expanding boundaries put pressures on the St. John residents and landowners. The neighborhood was further bisected by the construction of I-35 in the 1950s. And by the 1970s, the remaining acreage from the original 300-acre purchase was sold off to construct Highland Mall. Throughout the 1980s and 1990s, the St. John neighborhood continued to diversify, adding new layers of rich culture and history from Hispanic and Latino community members who now make up the majority demographic today. So you did already take a look at this is a bird eye view of the site. So it's 19 acres of city-owned land. You can see in the middle there's a green square. That's an existing pocket park that will be expanded roughly three times the size, and Ryan will show you pictures of that. But this has been a longstanding eyesore, honestly, for the St. John community. And so we're really excited to bring resources and connectivity and community to this site. This process started with a two-year community engagement process with assistance from the University of Texas Center for Sustainable Design. From that two-year process, three major themes arose, and that was adopted by council in a resolution in 2020, and those are: the community wanted to see a mixed-income, mixed-use district with affordable housing, particularly accessible to current and past residents of the neighborhood, open space for recreation and congregation, and space for community retail and support services specific to the St. John neighborhood. We went out for a solicitation, and what came back, and that three-part vision served as the basis of the solicitation as well as the scoring criteria. And that came back with at least 50% of all units being income-restricted affordable. The pocket park needed to be expanded with some sort of water feature to serve the St. John neighborhood. There used to be a pool within the St. John pocket park that was filled in. And then 15,000 square feet of community serving commercial retail, including local vendors. Additionally, there's a piece of that to honor the history of the St. John neighborhood, and we can talk about that later, but we're working with Art and Public Places, and we have solicited, and we have an artist on board who will be working with the community to put that in the park. And just to underscore how much community engagement has gone into this process, it started in 2017 under the leadership of then council member, now Congressman Kazar, went through from 2017 to 2019 community visioning process. We had council approve that vision. We went out for solicitation, and then even after that, we had a 16-member community advisory committee that met regularly. They provided input on the redesign of the site plan, materials for the buildings, layouts, and the park programming. Now I'm going to hand it over to Ryan.
Awesome. Steal this one. Yeah. Thank you, Christine. And again, I'm Ryan. There's two groups of architects on this project, so we're sort of teamed up with Graystar, helping them on this site plan, and then also focusing on the community buildings. And there is another architect who's also involved in really a specialist in the housing buildings as well. So I just kind of wanted to talk with you guys about the site plan and sort of how it all came together. So and then again, David will give you the sort of nuts and bolts specifics about the numbers. And so as you can see, this is our current layout. So we have those 500 plus units broken up into five different residential buildings. We can see all that community retail sort of on the right side over there, and that all flanks this hugely expanded community park. So again, there's some distinctions about which portions of this are city park, and it kind of bleeds over into the private side as you move to the west. And there's a sort of central hub of community spaces and amenity spaces right in the center there as well. And so it was a really challenging site, you know, a lot of the logistics of making sure that these units could remain as affordable as possible obviously necessitated a large amount of surface parking, which I think was when we first came in. There was a lot of challenges of how to arrange all of this to really make it feel like a great sense of place and a great sense of community. And so I just want to really highlight a few of the ways that we did that. And so the first way was we were really adamant about having a publicly accessible road that comes through to really make it feel welcoming and inviting, and it also provides access to the park, and so the community can come along the sort of central road, not feel like you're coming through a parking lot to bring people all the way through the site. So that was a really critical piece of the design focus. Along that, we're trying to bring in these sort of activated pedestrian streetscapes, so street trees, benches, the idea that both the neighborhood and the residents can sort of commingle along these corridors that go through the site. Go back one, and then the kind of community amenity spaces. So there is a whole community room and space with some breakout meeting room space built into this centralized clubhouse. There's also the community retail that Christine noted that sort of fronts the St. John side and then has a sort of protected edge along that private drive that runs through the project. So these are our community green spaces, right? So we have this massively expanded park, and we also have this other sort of small plaza that's in the center of the site. And so really excited about how the residential buildings and the retail and this sort of publicly accessible road all tie in and provide access to that pocket park, which currently is really, really difficult to get to. So great access, as we mentioned, so community access from the neighborhood, from the adjacent streets, and from internally. And then obviously resident connections to these parks was really thought through as well. And so we're feeling really great about, tying as much of this community into this amazingly expanded community asset, which is the park. And so all of these sort of activations and community spaces kind of all come together to, again, hopefully provide this sense of community, the sense of place. The biggest part was about trying to make sure that the St. John's community at large feels welcomed and integrated into this specific community of folks that are living on this project. So just to give you a quick history of sort of some of the thinking that went through the site plan. And then this is the last slide here. Our team, aside from helping out with the visioning on the overall site, was really focused on the clubhouse projects. And as Christine mentioned, we were involved in a lot of the later community meetings with the CAC. So there was a large questionnaire and working with those folks to understand their preferences. And so we took and presented a lot of local kind of institutional precedents you can see on the left. So there's a lot of great schools and churches and also the library. And so we kind of took that language some additional inspiration images you're seeing in the middle there, mixed with the community's focus, and these sort of images on the right are some of the early concepts for these community amenities and retail. So again, just to sort of reinforce this deep and longstanding work with the community to try to get both a site plan and an architectural language that feels really special, really unique, and really rooted in the St. John's neighborhood. That's what I'm on the site plan.
Thanks, Ryan. Obviously, we got to pay for this, and there's so many cool things about the project. And you know, when we started in 2020, financial and economic times were much different than they are in 2026. This project was always originally was going to be one site. That was the plan as we started. But as time evolved and things got more difficult, the best solution here, which we worked very carefully with our CAC, with the city, with the team, was to separate this into two to make it more feasible so we can get two projects on the ground but still meet the same requirements that the city laid out for us in their RFP and also still deliver a really good project, but something that we can get on the ground and be successful. So we're able to do that. Instead of me giving them, let David talk a little bit very quickly, give the high level of what each property will have in terms of units and affordability, and then we can stop for a minute and answer questions, or if you missed anything, you can re-engage us.
Yeah, absolutely. Good afternoon. Thanks again for having us. And that's right. I'll jump right into the housing part. As Christine mentioned in the RFP, the mixed income, mixed use request in the RFP was half of the units affordable at 60% MFI. And I wanted to give some kudos to Ron and Suzanne today that one of the very first pieces of feedback that they gave when we approached to partner together in this redevelopment was, hey, we need to make sure that we provide multiple tiers of median family income housing so that if somebody earns more in a year, they aren't displaced. So really pleased that today that plan is now effectuated and we have four different MFI levels across the St. John redevelopment. And instead of 50% of those units being restricted, 70% are. So I think we've provided for some mobility there, and just really glad that they guided us in that way. So thank you. And that's right. So like Ron said, this was to put together a feasible project that could get off the ground and deliver all of the community benefits that we promised in the RFP response in 2026. So St. John South has 201 units and St. John North has 325 units. So that still sums up to the 526 units that we proposed on. And then it did, like I mentioned, increase the affordability up from 50% of the units up to 70% of the units. Other things that I wanted to touch on was regarding the housing, the right to return for previous St. John residents. There's a first opportunity for those who have maybe been displaced from the St. John neighborhood to lease in the new housing.
That will be solely, we won't open it to the public until we have a period.
How do you arrange that?
So we've got some restrictions that we're obligated to within our restrictive covenants, and we've had Gray Stars compliance folks as well as the cities and the HACA team come together to make sure that it was possible. But there's a criteria, including having there was a UT study about displacement and the neighborhoods most affected by displacement. Mm-hmm. So there's we open it and then they provide criteria and we validate it and then provide that opportunity before the others can lease.
It was something that was very important to the neighborhood too. Really wanted to make sure that there was an opportunity for those residents to come back first. And what happens if they all lease and you know my mother can't come back or mm-hmm. something? So we carve that out.
Ron, and David, this is not housing. I mean, this was an old Home Depot. So when we talk about residents and former residents, who are they? Who are those people? And how do we
notify?
How to track them, notify them? How do we find them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I can take a first stab and we can all kind of chime in on it. It's correct. So the old Home Depot and the Chrysler dealership on this site most recently was not housing, but of course there has been displacement in the St. John neighborhood as Christine runs us through like the history that this used to be outside of the city and it's now so proximate. The increase in home values has led to displacement in the neighborhood. We do have a lead community engagement consultant who, in addition to us, who have met the CAC members and volunteered next to them at It's My Park Day and really gotten to know them. She's also got deep roots in this community. So there is some that is knowing current residents who have stayed in the community and can point us towards the previous residents of the St. John neighborhood, as well as we will be doing an affirmative marketing plan in English and Spanish to get the word out about this redevelopment. So,
are you able to use the churches for this purpose at all?
Yeah. The churches. Do you want to speak to Bobby's connection there?
So we are contracted with Pink Consulting, who's been invaluable on this project with connecting us in a very grassroots sort of way to the existing neighborhood. But also the CAC members themselves, the 16 members come from the faith community, they come from the business community, from the health community, the arts community, and all of them were selected because they had deep roots and ties with the St. John neighborhood. So I assume we'll be leaning greatly on those folks who have been with us for this ride for 5 years, and those relationships will definitely assist.
Christine, can you mention a couple of the faith leaders who are on there? There are some fairly significant folks.
Yeah, Reverend Freddie Dixon is on the CAC. Candace Hunter is there for education. We also have Dr. Alford, who has lived in the St. John community for many years, as well as current residents. We have Anissa and Ray Castillo, who are very active with the St. John Park. They are current residents. Akeem is also the Neighborhood Association president. So it's a very diverse group of folks, both living in and having lived in the St. John neighborhood.
And do we have a definition of the St. John neighborhood?
Yeah, it's a really great, so we've been using so the city actually has a combined adopted neighborhood plan for Coronado Hills and St. John. So we've been using that boundary as the limits, although the historic St. John's neighborhood is really about a 4x4 mile block that you can see if you look on the aerial where the grid is west, east of the 19 acres is the historic neighborhood.
Honestly, we put together a very dynamic financial package, and we can go through those terms if you are so interested. It'll be two separate projects. We are doing this, which you are so used to, of us bringing projects under the government code 392. These projects will both be under, and that's why you're seeing these under the Austin, the South Congress PFC. These are actually under the government chapter code of 303. And that was an important change that we needed to make in order that as stewards, the Housing Authority will be the stewards of the land and the buildings for the city. And at the end of the 60-year lease term, that this property, and this will then go and revert back to the city for a whopping $1. So we're going to be really excited when we get when I get that dollar in 60 years from now.
And we'll all be there.
We'll all be there to watch it. Yes, but so you know we often don't we normally don't do a lot of 303s if any you know to under 303. But it was an important you know step that we had to do in order to guarantee that would happen.
But the city has the option to read. I'm sorry, Commissioner, please.
I just had one question with regards to the retail spaces that you have here. What is your plan for those?
Business incubator.
Yeah, that is one of
all business.
That's absolutely one of them. We've got a list in the restrictive covenants that we're happy to share with you. It'll run with the land. It's 15,000 square feet the community has provided over the years of community engagement, both before Graystar's involvement and after it. A list of users that they would like to see, including small businesses, business incubators, small-scale grocers, nonprofit workspace, medical, like clinic space. So we have a very defined list that are to be the first tenants into the space, and additionally 5,000 square feet, so a third of it is earmarked, has to be leased at half of the then prevailing market rate.
And then to this site, where is the closest HEB or true grocery store?
Probably the Miller HEB, just south of there.
You have to go back to
the Hancock one.
Or the
right,
Hancock.
Or both, I think.
Yeah, the they're about equidistant.
Yeah.
Yes, Steph.
Okay.
Oh, and then one more question. Sorry, just for on the picture that you just had, if you don't mind going back to the PowerPoint, where is 35? So just so I can get
it's placed. It's on the far west side here. So basically we're...
So the park is in the back or on the east side?
So we're on the east side of 35, and so okay. Top to bottom would be 35 on the left side. Yeah, right over there going north to south, and St. John's is on the south of this. And so
the location of this park is really key because there were a lot of discussions about, like, do we put the park up against the service drive to create a buffer? And really we heard very strongly from the community that they wanted the park as close to them as possible. So that's why you see it located here. And that's also the same for the retail, right? Like a lot of times people would look at this and say, why isn't the retail up against the highway? Well, the retail is here specifically to anchor the park and to be within walking distance and walkable to the adjacent St. John neighborhood.
I believe originally we had the retail on 35 fronted, I mean, on facing that, so we would set that aside, and we were resoundingly shot down with that idea.
Nice. Well, that's what's that's Miller. I mean, Miller's got the retail along 35.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any more questions?
Please. I just had one more question. I'm
please
sorry.
Please do
ask. Just because we're talking about potential small businesses, how are you going to ensure that these spots are affordable, because as we're talking, Miller's not affordable to small businesses.
Rental affordability.
For small business rental, it's not very affordable. How are these going to be made affordable?
Yeah, it's another great question. So as I mentioned, a third of it has to be at 50% of the prevailing market rate. So 5,000 square feet is restricted in that way.
For the small businesses?
Yes, retail? Yeah. The retail can only be from that list that we went through. So it won't be a Chick-fil-A. It won't be a
Businesses.
No chain businesses, right. So,
and that is those, there's about the categories that David listed, and those will be included in the restrictive covenants on the property. So it runs with the land.
Stays with the land for 60 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
So you mentioned one of those could be a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. And we've been, I just want to, so the CAC has grown over the years, the Community Advisory Committee, and so in our next iteration of the CAC, we've been reaching out to the small business owners in and around St. John to serve too, so that they can, you know, provide contacts and feedback about, you know, what they're seeing for the needs potentially in this retail space. So the CAC continues to be a really guiding force on this project, and we hope so in the next iteration too.
Are there any more questions or comments from Ron or our guests?
I'm just.
I just want to say thank you so much. The partnership with HACA has really meant a lot to the city of Austin. We don't get to partner very often, and so this is a very special project for us.
Thank you for that. I know they've worked really hard on it, as we have heard.
Yeah, they sure have. Echo the appreciation. So thank you.
Thank you.
Can I interject just two quick things for the board?
Okay, Mr. Gerber.
One is that it did take a long time to get here, and you did see a version of this project 5 years ago, and it's dramatically different than what it was, and there's lots of good reasons for it. And the city has provided a very tough and challenging framework to work through, and this partnership has been among the three of us has been a challenging partnership to work through lots of things. There's been a rush to get to this place today because council wants to take this up on May 28th. Mm-hmm. While you all are approving these terms in a general sense, I just want to make sure that we're all clear. We're going to take the time, and council back there is going to relay to Bill and to Sarah. We're going to take whatever time we need to go through the mountain of documents because these good folks at Graystar are going to check out after this property is built and filled, and then we're going to be the ones with our new partner to operate this thing and be responsible for it for the next 60 years. Is that fair?
It's possible that they have the option to.
They might stay.
They have the option.
They might go.
I hope they stay for 30 years with us, yeah. but they have that is one thing under 303 is if the developer has the option to remove itself, sell its leasehold interest, and then bring in a new partner that will carry on. But all the restricted covenants, all the things in place convey no matter what happens on that end, so that everyone's still subject to whatever those underwriting criteria is put in place on the land.
But we just want to be really careful and just everyone know there's still quite a bit of due diligence to be done here. So just no surprises if we can't get to the closing table on June 15th or whatever the date is. We're going to take the time that we need to on our end because it's just really, really important. But we really appreciate the opportunity to work with the city. This was, the city, this really is sort of the big test of can the city do development on city land? And council and Mayor Pro Tem Vella has been very, animated about that and has really helped to lead in, since taking over from Council Member Kassar. And so this, I think that we're proving we can get it done. And so it's a really beautiful design.
I did want to add one thing that Graystar did step up and put. This is not city land that they said, here, you can have it and through an RFP. Mm-hmm. What are the amount are we defeasing on their bond?
It's an $11 million purchase price.
So we're paying $11 million, taking that off the city's debt as part of this financing plan, which added to, the difficulty of making this all work. So, that was a pretty big ask in the very beginning that we would have to inherit that type of a amount of dollars. So it was a big win. It's a big win for the city too. And Graystar that was some of our challenges in putting the financial things packaged together.
What's the agenda item going to look like for council next week? What are they going to be asking?
We actually have three items on the May 28th council agenda. So the first one and most relevant to this conversation is that the state statute requires both the HACA board to approve. It also requires an item that the city council approve a PFC development as well. So we'll be going with that. We'll also be getting a resolution to defease the remaining bond debt, as Ron mentioned, and then we'll be doing a budget amendment to be able to receive funds for the purchase of the property.
And what's the goal with the funds that you receive?
The strength of the offer between Graystar and HACA was that it was not just to defease the debt, but it was an $11 million upfront payment for the land. We have been paying on that debt as we do, as good stewards of public funds. There is a delta now. All of that money is going into a CIP account that will be reinvested directly into the St. John neighborhood. So we will be putting back a missing pedestrian bridge over Buttermilk Creek. We're going to be upgrading sidewalks with ADA accessibility. So any of the proceeds that we receive off of this is going right back to the St. John community.
Another added perk.
Okay. All right. Any more questions or comments from either our guests or Mr. Gerber or Mr. Kowal?
I'm good.
Good stuff.
Okay. If not, then do I hear a motion to approve resolution 00023 to take actions necessary for St. John's South apartment lessee?
So moved.
All right, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Carl moves. Tyra seconds. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
No. Okay, I think, yes. Thank you, Carl. Okay, with that, the resolution passes. So we move on to number three, which is St. John North. So this is basically the same discussion.
Yes.
That we just had.
We kind of combined them both for you at one point. So, and as I mentioned earlier, these are two separate transactions. So we needed two separate resolutions because they are two separate developments. So 0024 is just approving the North property, getting your consent.
Under the same conditions. Under the same conditions. The same that we have just discussed.
That's correct.
Okay. With that, do I hear a motion? Mary moves.
I'll second.
Barbara second.
Just one question.
Yeah. Tyra question.
So in with North, 50% will be at market rate. 50% of the units will be at market rate. 49.2%. So.
But we will have three different MFI levels on that side. We'll have 50% units. I mean, sorry, 60% units, 70% units, and 80% units. Mm-hmm. Those are pretty wide. I mean, we have 27% of the units are at 60. So when I always present some deals, we talk about 10% of the units at 60. This is 27% at 60, and I think it's 22% at 80. And then the balance is at 70. So the affordability is a little deeper on this than,
right.
Across than a normal.
And that sort of helps make the deal.
Well, it got us to doing, instead of 50% across the portfolio, we're at 70% of the units will be at affordable levels. And so we were able to make that work.
Okay. All right. That was-
okay. With that, I think we have a motion. We have a second. Any more discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Then I will close this meeting. Well, first of all, let me thank our guests who are with us today, and thank you for working very hard on this with us. Right. We thank Ron, Suzanne for the amount of work that has gone into this, and look forward to the council's action next week.
Oh, yes.
Do you expect any surprises?
I do not.
Boston City Council.
Well, of course, you've done your homework with the council, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. We'll all be kind of listening and hoping that this indeed does go through as you all plan for it to.
Ron, would it be possible to ask?
Christine.
Oh. No, Ron, actually. Could we get the team together with Commissioner Boetta? Because Commissioner Boetta has forgotten more about small business development than we'll ever know. And, heading up the Economic Growth Business Incubator in East Austin for many, many years. Mm-hmm. If I think it would be fabulous if we could, even if there's not the avenue for, an EGBI St. John's, if there's an avenue for, small businesses that are, ready, connecting, her with the new executive director, there would be wonderful. And Michael Cummings of our team is very active as the chair of EGBI. So we've got really strong connections there that I think would be wonderful. And Larissa's great, so.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We'd love to have your help.
Of course.
Okay. Well, with that, I will accept a motion to close the meeting of the South Congress PFC.
Aye.
Mary moves. Second. Tyra seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Meeting closed at 1:40.
Should we take a quick break?
Yeah, that's thank you all very much, suggest. And thank you.
Take a break.
Look and forward to so look forward to this moving coming. Along finally.
Oh, we're very excited.
Hey, I love you.
You don't mind?
So,
that would be
good. Okay. Yes, we are taking a break.
Okay, we go into executive session now.
Turning it back over to Tyra, and we're taking a break.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, we got to roll into an executive session, I guess.
That might take a while.
Hi, Orly.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I don't think I'm
wasn't good. Going back there, okay. But we got a posse yoga.
Quite a lot of deals.
And we
oh, yes, and do, we do, but and that's good.
A couple thousand.
Okay.
For,
I want to take them too. They're ordering now, so you know I'm
going to pretty much. When is the
hour?
This
thank you. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Very nice to meet you. Look forward to getting together soon.
Absolutely.
Kickoff meeting.
Good job. They're honoring Al, and they're going to do an endowment. So that's why I wanted to make sure I invited you.
Do you have any questions about it? How are we
going to explain it? Let me look at it. I think there's an issue with that. Not, I was in Sam. Let me, can I get back to you?
Sure.
I think there's
just
like,
a little bit
different. Too low, by the way?
No.
No. What do you want? Do you want?
No, I'm fine.
The money is more.
Hey, Jorge, you may want to mute everything until we come back.
Look at
oh my goodness.
can I do for you?
Come and just get another coke, okay? I need caffeine.
There should be some cold here.
Can we get you some ice?
Are we still in there warm?
All of these are.
Yeah. About the same?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, dear.
And you still gonna make that one?
Yeah, I think, yeah. We'll do that. Yeah, he prepared a presentation. He's very quick. You did a whole presentation. I know, we're very excited. So we'll do you under staff things, and then we'll go to executive session afterwards. Because yours can be in public. There's no legal dimension to it. My office, and there's I think it's in the second pile, but one of the piles has like HUD rules directives. And there's a file in there. Can you bring that down?
Okay.
Thank you. It's kind of like all the crazy HUD rules. Okay. I should say that. Are we online?
No.
We're about music.
We'll be sure to put that in the
minutes. Yeah. The Gerber said, all the crazy HUD rules.
All the crazy what?
HUD, new HUD rules.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that an exciting project, St. John's?
Yes, it is. I mean, it really is.
Isn't it cool?
Okay, let us begin. Return to the Housing Authority agenda. And it's item number 4. Ron, do you wish to add any additional comments to item number 4?
No, ma'am. This is just our standard where we come to you so we can, HACA can convey the land in our structure under 392, and then we just approve AHC's actions.
Okay. So again, are there any questions or comments from the commissioners for item number 4? This is, of course, what we just approved in the committee meeting. So if there are no comments or questions, I will entertain a motion for approval of resolution numbers 02948.
So moved.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Now, item number 5. Again, Ron, this is an item that we just approved, the Bridge at South Point Apartments. And this is for 176 unit apartments with 16 efficiencies, 104 one bedroom units, and 56 two bedroom units. And any additional comments or questions for Ron?
This just allows us to execute, HACA, to execute documents to facilitate the closing.
Okay, and this is, this loan, short-term bridge loan, is not to exceed $13 million, as of course,
six-month term.
Okay. Entertain a motion to approve resolution number 02950. Second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Approval. Motion passed. Okay, item number 6. And this is the item that's been approved in committee to facilitate the development of St. John South apartments. And we have listed here the affordability mix on page 41 to 52, in case you need to review that for a second. But, and this price for the St. John South is $600,000. And the project is approximately, cost of the project is approximately $42.9 million. Okay. Are there any questions or additional questions or comments?
One question for Ron. Where is Gray Star? Where's their main office? Where are they located? Are they in Austin? Are they an Austin-based company?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
They're national. They're headquarters. I'm not sure where they're all up there everywhere. They're national, but they have a large presence on UK Road or out in Mopac.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Are there no further questions? Entertain a moment for approval of resolution number 02951.
So move.
Oh, pardon. Yeah, 5-1. Yeah.
So move.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Just confirming, Commissioner Ritchie?
Aye.
Commissioner Ritchie votes aye. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Moving on to item number 7. And this is the item that we adopted in committee to develop the housing known as North St. John, located at 19-acre site in South Congress. And again, on page 45 and 52, the affordability mix for the 325 units in the North St. John located there. And we see that as we had discussed before, 50% would be at market rate and the other 50% basically at a very affordable rate mixture. So if there are no other comments or questions on this item, I will move for approval.
I'll move.
Barbara moves. Second?
Second.
Mary seconds it. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. The motion passes. And I believe that is all the items that we have before us on part of the regular agenda. Is that correct, Mr.?
That is correct. And we are at a little
and
before.
And now we adjourn to go into executive session.
Well, I think a couple of items we can handle outside of executive session because they won't require there's no appropriate means by which we need to go into executive session for a couple of them.
Okay.
So I did want to, under my president's report, utilize the time to do a couple of quick staff reports. As many of you know, we are proceeding on a pretty significant program regarding the use of AI. I think every responsible business is focused on how we can use AI tools to create greater efficiencies. But here, you know, the challenge is that we serve, you know, we're blessed to be able to serve those of lowest income in our community, and so we don't want to ever lose the human connection. One of the big reasons that we're so thrilled to have Jorge, heading up our technology management innovation efforts is because we're trying to bridge how we use technology, but at the same time don't lose the human touch. Get those efficiencies that we want to get, but go deeper as we try to advance self-sufficiency efforts. And so Jorge is going to provide a brief overview today of some of the things we're thinking about with regards to AI. And it's just to kind of kickstart the conversation.
Correct.
And what you're going to hear today, by the way, is really a sequence of about, including an executive session, of about seven just sort of things we need you to know. There's nothing to fix. There's nothing to – feel free to ask questions. But it's just a lot of work that's going on that we think it's appropriate, and as part of your duties, we want to make sure that you're informed. So, Jorge, why don't you take it away and let the board know what we're thinking about.
Yep. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Jorge Vasquez. I'm the director of the TMI department here at the Housing Authority of Austin. And, yeah, like Mike said, as the progress of technology, is bringing us into AI, right? So we've been thinking about how to best incorporate it into our business processes, right? So, just a quick overview of challenges, right? So we deal with a lot of customer frustrations because sometimes our processes take too long. They're too involved. They're too bureaucratic. There's a lot of paperwork. Our staff is taking a long time processing through, that process. We have rising demands. HUD is coming up with updates. We have Inspire. We have HOTMA coming up. Rising costs, right, in staffing, in everything, energy, everything is going up. And also the feeling of losing the human connection, right? So we spend so much time just going through the motions we're not focusing on the human touch. So the opportunity that we're looking at is obviously improving customer service, right? That's always one of the main focuses that we have. So for that, we're looking at self-service portals, so allowing our customers, our residents, our applicants, everybody that interacts with us to have those tools available for them so they can do their processes, the processes that they need without waiting for us. 24/7 access, right? They can do it, at the comfort of their homes whenever they have, if they have any technology available, they can use it. Is it a laptop? Whether it's a mobile phone, they can do any process that they need at their convenience. Fast response times, obviously that's a priority, and multilingual, right? So we have a diverse community, not just English and Spanish, but we see more people from different backgrounds interacting with us, so we need to address it as well.
Vietnamese, Arabic, Swahili. Lots
correct.
Of different
yes.
Languages.
I was just going to ask, what were examples, maybe the top five languages?
The one that I've been noticing the most is Arabic, mm-hmm. besides the English and Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. some Korean, a little bit of Vietnamese, Mandarin. I haven't seen that many Mandarin people, but interacting with us, or at least, you know, we have an AI on the phone system that can detect languages. I haven't seen, those are the most common ones.
So you're getting Cantonese rather than Mandarin?
No, I haven't seen any of languages from China.
More Arabic, some Farsi.
Yeah, we've seen Arab, exactly.
My paper at the Lady Bird Mandarin.
Correct. So what that means for our staff, or the benefits, the opportunities that we're looking for our staff is automating repetitive processes, right? So the majority of our residents, all of our residents and participants have to recertify every year, every 2 years, or what have you. So that, we've noticed that that takes a long time, just getting to them, getting the documentation back, right? There's a lot of back and forth. It's a 3-month process, and it's taking, in some instances, taking the full 3 months just to get them.
From application to?
Not even. On the recertification process, they're already a resident, right? So, and we call them, hey, your recertification is due in 90 days. You have to come in, tell us again, if there's any income changes, any family changes. So that's, in some instances, it takes a full 3 months to get through, right, when the information should be readily available. Waitlist management, right? That's another big one. We have our HCV waitlist. We haven't opened in years, right? And we still have a lot of purging that we need to do. We don't know if the contacts or the people that applied are still valid, are still interested, are still around. So we need a way to. Right now, we're doing it manually.
How do you verify all that?
Right, with communication.
We have to send out letters and ask, are you still interested? Mm-hmm. If you are still interested, you need to fill out this form to confirm and send it back via snail mail. So there are definitely ways that we can streamline that to make it much easier. Mm-hmm. They applied online, so there's already, theoretically, they have an email address. Mm-hmm. And we can do it much, much more quickly and make sure that the wait lists are actually fresh. They are up to date versus when we send out interview letters, we get maybe half of them back deliverable. Right. Because they've moved on, they've changed their addresses, and now we can't find them. So we do have an opportunity here
and
to
even
make this more up to date.
If an applicant applied, let's say, 6 years ago, right, and they need to update their information, update their contact, right now it's they have to call, they have to come in, they have to get the right person to update their information, right? So when they could easily go to our website, update their information themselves, right, and keep that wait list fresh.
How often do y'all check? Annually, or
it varies.
See if they're still if they're still interested in staying on the wait list.
Right.
Depends on the program. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I believe Brilli tries to do it every year, at least for the HCV, right? Which is the one that we have more issues.
She tries, but again, she has to kind of stop what she's doing, her day job, and do this. And it's a major undertaking because of all of the administrative burden of literally stuffing envelopes and getting them out, whereas another automated system can just do it in the background and make sure that it stays up to date.
Automated, And
large agencies have the model that you're talking about or using those tools that you're talking about?
I think we're all in the same race, right? We're seeing that the need is there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some of these ideas come from other housing authorities and some of our other ones are, we see our own need and we're trying to address it. So it's a combination, right? We're all trying to address similar issues in our own way.
We do. In fact, I went to a Yardi meeting a few weeks back, and there were a couple of public housing authorities, one from West Palm Beach County in Florida and one out of Maine, I think Lewiston, Maine. And they do have these tools in place. And so they were basically talking about how so much of that administrative burden has been lifted from their staff, and they can dedicate that time to the customer service piece.
And is the resolution writing programs to handle all these?
A combination, right? And that's pretty much what I'm trying to illustrate here. We have to do a combination of improving the business process, infusing it with technology and automation, right? So that we pretty much updating all of our business processes mm-hmm. with some technology and some efficiencies, mm-hmm. some time savings included.
Do you have a priority list already about?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
We have about 30 projects identified that we're working on. Okay. And just to give you an idea, this is a proof of concept that we did internally mm-hmm. using AI in one of our business processes, right? So we call it the TSP analyzer. This whenever we get a new landlord or on the SHCC side, right? When we get any of their documentation, we run it through the analyzer. It checks the. Sometimes we get 100-page documents, right, from their tenant selection plans. Mm-hmm. It used to take. These numbers are very conservative. I think you know we've seen people take longer just reviewing a document, right? So, but on average. We have 13 compliance specialists reviewing these documents. We get about 65 of these a month. Mm-hmm. Before, it used to take them an hour and 15 minutes to do on average, right? But that range is probably bigger, right? Because we've seen some take 4 or 5 hours, right, depending on the size of the document that we get. Mm-hmm. So now we're doing it in about 30 minutes, right? Including the check, including the human already verifying that the information is correct, right? So this, in the first couple of months, it saved us about 30 hours, right, of labor. And another figure that is not here, this test has cost us $33, right? So significant savings, right, for the amount of work that's being done. So what's next? Excuse me. Some of the ideas that we have, some of the projects that we're currently working on, the recertification process automation, right? We're trying to have that document gathering process that usually takes the longest, try to make it more streamlined and more efficient. Like I said, self-service portals to allow our customers to, you know, interact with us and do their business with us or at their own time. Document compliance review, that's the example that I just showed you. We want to expand it to more areas. Automated communications, right? If we want to send the notice, automated notice, when your recertification is up, if, you know, any process that it's due, you know, we want to give you a heads up, mm-hmm. Before the time comes. Another one, waitlist management, like I already mentioned, and then improving our landlord relationship tools, right? So, again, portals, beefing up the information that they can get, the interactions that they can have with us.
And just to be clear on that, on all those things, like when we think about, if you think about it like online banking, you know, it's for some people, it's great to go and have access 24/7. Mm-hmm. Some people love it. Some people also want to come and see
right.
the banker, come see go to a teller. And that will never change from 8 to 5.
Right.
That resource will always still be here. The better part about it is because, you know, we think, like, for example, with recertifications, probably 50-60% of people can probably do it themselves and have the luxury of doing it on, you know, have the ability mm-hmm. to do it on the weekend or whenever
right.
it's convenient for them. It's pretty straightforward. You know, oftentimes it's the same document, just mm-hmm. you know, the next year's iteration of it.
Correct.
And it makes it so that it's more convenient on their schedule versus on the working with an eligibility specialist or a, you know, one of our other team members, you know, where you have to get schedules synced up. But those people will always still be there, and it'll be possible to do a deeper dive with those 40% who can't fill it out. Mm-hmm. And we're also thinking about how do we make that experience better. One of the things that El Paso's done, we sent a team of people out to El Paso, and we're lucky because we stole Jorge from the El Paso Housing Authority about 3 years ago. One of the things that they've done in El Paso is they've created basically a big welcome center, you know, that's open where there's not quite the same, one eligibility specialist doesn't have a caseload in quite the same way. It's really whoever comes through. We've had a set of people whose skills have really sort of been stepped up, and they can handle anything that comes through the door, which is really nice.
Right. And again, in that same concept, They're using a lot of technology to streamline the process, so the staff that it's at that Welcome Center, they can help anybody, not just their assigned caseworker, right? So they can, you know, since that technology has made it so easily, you know, they're taking advantage of that. Any staff member can assist anybody that comes in through the door. And so that's pretty much what we're trying to accomplish, right? We're not trying to make everything technology. We're trying to get rid of the busy work so that our staff members can focus on the actual human component of their jobs, right? Which I think that's we're missing somewhat of that process. So, yeah, I just wanted to give you a quick update on what we're doing in TMI. Any questions?
I use AI every day for just about everything. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate y'all doing this. It definitely makes my life more efficient. But it's definitely the customer service piece. When I think about AI and tech efficiencies, I always think about my 81-year-old mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yep. Please make sure we always keep that in mind.
Yeah, yeah, and that's. We're trying with this, a lot of these efforts are going to help, you know, probably the younger population, our younger customers, the customers that have access to technology, so that our staff can help our elderly population, right, or disabled population. They can be more focused on that.
We call the technology challenge individuals who may be younger than 80.
Correct. But they actually need the more assistance, right, so we can focus our staff on that population.
As a quick side note for the helping overcome sort of that technology gap,
mm-hmm.
ACC and HACA are celebrating 10 years of digital inclusion, and the longest internship program of its type that ACC has been the HACA ACC partnership.
Out of all the internship programs that ACC has partnered with, mm-hmm. the one with HACA is the longest lasting.
That's very good.
That's the digital inclusion.
We've moved hundreds of students, and we've hired several as well
to
work in this space. So we've had great resources to help those who are, as we have adopted Rent Cafe, as we've adopted other technology platforms.
Mm-hmm.
This will be a big change, but
we've
had that added resource, which is really nice.
Yeah. Yep.
Our secret sauce.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions for Jorge on AI?
Thank you. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is.
But. More briefings to come.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bless you, Mary.
Let me turn because I want to update you real quickly on Southwest Housing Compliance Corporation. We had a very productive series of meetings last week when I was in Washington with the LHAC Coalition, the Local Housing Administrators Coalition. This is a group of agencies that are just like ours. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the Oakland Housing Authority in California handles Northern California,
mm-hmm.
Serving as the contract administrator for HUD for project-based Section 8. The Los Angeles Housing Authority handles Southern California. There's a collection of housing authorities in Georgia that handle the states of Georgia and Illinois. Tampa handles Florida. We handle Texas and Arkansas. So it's roughly 50% of these project-based contracts that we administer, about 65,000 contracts in Texas and Arkansas that we administer through Southwest Housing Compliance. So we're and Michael Cummings next year will be the chair of LHAC, which we're really excited by. We've been concerned about whether or not there's movement to try to, you know, to work to rebid these contracts, and there's been a lot of litigation around those contracts, as many of you know, and there's a deeper dive to be had. But what I really wanted to tell you is that the coalition had an opportunity to meet last week, and I was there with the HUD Deputy Secretary, Andrew Cues. We met with the FHA Commissioner, Joe Gormley, Acting FHA Commissioner. We met with the Assistant Secretary for Housing, Lamar Seitz, and then we met with the HUD Chief of Staff, who's a very bright guy, whose name is escaping me at the moment, but who came from Capitol Hill. And is Secretary Turner's chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of confidence expressed in the work that the PBCAs are doing and in helping HUD fulfill its mission. And it does not appear at this point that there's any real concern about, rebids at this point, and that we, that those jobs are secure, and that we just continue to keep doing our work, which is really nice. And so I just want to make you all aware that a lot of meetings have been happening in Washington at the highest level. We also did the rounds on Capitol Hill, and we think that this is not an issue that's going to be dealt with by either Congress or by the administration this year. So that's good news on that. We will probably do a legal briefing for you with Orlando Cabrera, our counsel up in D.C., at some point in the next couple of board meetings. With that said, let me turn to – I think we're now at a place where there's let's talk about 392 legislation for a few minutes. I don't think that requires us going into executive session, do you? So as you know, in the next round of the Texas State Legislature, we are expecting we're expecting considerable discussion about property tax exemptions. As you know, last two legislative sessions ago, so affordable housing appears in the state local government code in three places. It appears in Section 303, which are these public facility corporations. And the state legislature really drew a strict line on how that tool gets used. We haven't used it until just today when we're using it because the city wants to use it. And it really does benefit cities. Section 394 deals with housing finance corporations. So there's a number of those here in Travis County. There's been other housing finance corporations around the state. And those housing finance corporations really had there were some that were traveling housing finance corporations. These were entities that were in places like Pleasanton or in Cameron County or other far-flung places where Pecos, and they go to Houston, and they would take something off the tax rolls in Houston or Dallas and even here in Austin without ever asking the elected officials in those communities before, taking, $40 million worth of real estate off the tax rolls. So that practice got shut down by the legislature last session. The last place that affordable housing appears is 392, which is our governing statute. So we're very anxious about what it means for us, and will we be able to continue to do these deals and award, tax exemptions to affordable properties? As you know, we have more than 100 of those deals, and the ones that are most at risk are obviously our acquisition preservation deals. If you go into your booklet, it's the ones that are, under the blue. These are those. The ones that are in the green, these are new construction projects that we largely did with bonds and tax credits, and the red ones as well are largely using bonds and tax credits as well. So those are not being dealt with, but the ones in blue are. So for us, our exposure is 56 properties. That's a lot of affordability that could be lost if the legislature were to remove 392 or modify 392. Housing authorities, of course, are very different than these other entities, and what you have in front of you is a presentation that we are using to educate. And sorry, Commissioner, if I can borrow your. Yep. This is a presentation that we are using to begin the process of educating legislators about what is a public housing authority.
Now, who is we? Who developed this?
All of the public housing authorities in Texas, under Texas NARO, and including also something called the Texas Housing Coalition, have been working together to try to piece together this document.
Okay.
And to tell the story about what's the real impact of the affordable housing that we operate. How many voucher holders do we serve? How many units are we serving at 30 and 50 and 60 and 80%? And then with the revenue that we generate, how much of that revenue goes to really help the broader community? So this is a general resource kind of describing the difference of public housing authorities really from other housing providers, how we provide supportive services, how we reinvest in our mission, how through our boards like y'all, we have local oversight, and how there's limited resources in what used to be public housing, but how thanks to our ability to partner and develop new affordable housing, we've been able to take the revenue, shift it over, and rebuild properties like Chalmers Courts, Santa Rita, and certainly Rosewood, which are very expensive and where we wouldn't have the dollars otherwise. So I want you to have a copy of this presentation and take a look at your leisure, but our idea is to try to sort of start sharing this in the coming weeks and months. And we're certainly following the guidance of our chair, who, you know, there too has forgotten more about the legislature than many of us will ever know. And so we're working very closely with TAP and with Roger Arriaga at TAP, and we're working with other leaders there. We'll be on a panel. I got invited on a panel at TAP on this very issue. And so we're talking to lots and lots of folks. And so I wanted you to be aware of that. Housing authorities are different. We serve real people. We have real boards. We're not just a financing entity. And so we need to tell that story. And we think it's getting through. One sign of it getting through is that we've actually had conversations with the biggest critic, Gary Gates, who's a representative from Houston, who we believe is going to come visit us in some point in June. We're going to take him on a tour of some of our properties that we have and show him the revenue. We've been sharing documents about how much revenue we earn. For example, at Lexington Hills, a beautiful property that we acquired back, you know, 10 years ago. With the revenue from that property, we've directly seen benefits for Boys and Girls Clubs at Chalmers and for money going into Rosewood Courts. And so we're going to take him to go see Rosewood Courts. And when we get that scheduled, we'll let you all know, because I think some of you might be interested in meeting him. Ron, anything you'd want to share? There's just a lot of work happening.
But we are you can tell we're taking this very seriously. And I think we have a really good story to tell.
Meetings with staff during this off-year session could you possibly have to do this kind of education? Or is that possible even?
We're going to do lots of meetings. And Commissioner Ritchie, would you want to share? We're planning some lunch and learns as well. State legislative staffers enjoy the lunch and learns. You know, we buy them pizza and they come and they mm-hmm. Get an overview of this. This presentation's partly for that. And then we're looking forward to actually doing some tours. We've offered to be able to go and visit with any state legislator. They may not have affordable housing the way we have it here in Austin, mm-hmm. but we can show if they can pull away from the Capitol for a few minutes, or even if their staffers can. And certainly even the governor's office and lieutenant governor and speaker's office, we want to show them. So we're using Lexington Hills, maybe the Henley, perhaps Amley Eastside. We'll have to see. A couple of other properties that are close to the Capitol, and then take them over to Rosewood Courts and to Chalmers and show them what we've done. Yeah.
Yeah. Carl, I just think it's so valuable to get the staffers educated about these issues, even more important than half of the representatives, because they so influence what the representatives are going to be putting out, right? So I would say focus on them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are there any interim studies that address any of these three pieces of legislation?
There's one looking at the impacts of House Bill 21, which dealt with the housing finance corporations. That was part of it, but it's also there's been the broader kind of slap down of the housing finance corporations that weren't traveling HFCs either. The first five pages of that bill dealt with the traveling HFCs. The back 20 pages of it put all sorts of requirements, audit requirements and threshold reporting that has to happen. So it's proven to be quite burdensome. Very few HFC deals are being done. Strategic Housing Finance Corporation here in Austin has done no deals since that law took effect.
Suzanne's been very active on the committee with TDHCA to develop and work through a committee to, when they presented the audit requirements and how restrictive they were and where some compromises were, she sits on that committee, and those guidelines were sent to TDHCA. Were approved in March, April, but for HB 21, and they're pretty punitive in terms of the amount of work and effort, and so they made some pretty good changes that we felt were good, but a lot of the things that we put in, our Representative Gates immediately put in comments opposed to the recommendations that the committee put together. It was led by Stephanie Neckwin. Novogradic and TDHCA did adopt a lot of his requirements that we were fighting. So the HFCs are playing their own strategies on how they're going to deal with you know, this upcoming, I say, because it's really put a stop, hard stop on what they've been doing. It's going to be really tough.
Is Todd
Kirchhoff
the executive director over there? Do they have any money? Or?
Todd continues to be the executive director for TALFA, and he's involved in those discussions. He's also representing a PHA or two in his other government relations work. So he's been involved in some of those conversations. I think Todd would say there's a lot of dissatisfaction about what happened and how this operationalizes. And I think that'll be expressed during those hearings. And I think what the PHAs are gonna say is, we're really sorry that happened to 394, and it needs to be fixed. For goodness sakes, please don't let that happen to 392. And I think the business, the development community, the businesses, you know, that are part of keeping Texas strong, see the risk to Texas. I mean, the idea that Fannie and Freddie are no longer really doing deals here in Texas because of the uncertainty. We talked to CDT yesterday. They said that they would come and join us to say, you know, we don't think Austin right now is investable and Texas is investable because of the uncertainty that you've created.
TALFA wasn't very active in the last legislative session, were
they? They were. Todd and others were. I think there were some splits in strategy, but at the end, and Carl, I don't want to put you on the spot, and if you're available, but there was a group of folks, they dubbed themselves the Housing Avengers, where they were trying to really work in unison. But at the end of the day, I think there were a lot of forces that people thought that everyone was shooting straight, and as might be a surprise in the state legislature at the end of session, sometimes people aren't. And so I think, Carl, anything you'd share about that?
Yeah, I think everybody who sort of touches the financing in 394 at one point in time got engaged. Others got engaged sooner rather than later. But by, you know, late April, everybody was simply engaged. Because everybody knew what the impact of HB 21 would be upon the industry, and, you know, Chairman Gates made it very clear that he not only wanted to, whatever he was going to be able to accomplish in 394, he was planning on doing it to 392 and then go back and redo it to 303. He wants all three statutes to mirror each other. So all the pitfalls with HB 21 that are in 394 would get spread to 303 and 392. And basically, you know, you would have very few deals done. And I think, you know, from his perspective, he thinks deals will still get done. You may not do as many, and it may cost people more money to do them, but people will find a way to do it because there's money to be made doing affordable housing. There are a lot of folks who don't subscribe to that theory, but that was his theory, and he was able to convince a number of folks to that, persuade them to that point of view, and therefore he was able to pass HB 21. Yeah, you raised the issue about, you know, you and Tara about reaching out to staff. There is a lunch and learn plan for the Capitol staff. I think the week of June 23rd, because there's a hearing that's going to be held that week by the Government Affairs Committee in the House. And so that's a good opportunity since, you know, members will be coming to town, their staffs will be preparing to do a lunch and learn to sort of to educate them on, you know, the difference between public housing, PFCs, and HFCs. And I think there will probably be another one, follow-up, sometime in the fall. I do know TAP is planning on doing a lunch and learn for Capitol staff in the fall, late summer, early fall. There's been some discussion about doing that. But you are right. I mean, we need to educate the legislative community about public housing, what we do, who we serve, and why we are involved in supportive or workforce housing and how that is used to benefit folks who live in our developments, whether you want to call them public housing, RAD, or however, whatever title you want to give that. But that's that really helps us to, you know, finance these transactions. And, you know, the benefit is us being involved in sort of mixed-use housing or mixed-income housing, rather, allows us to provide a place for our Section 8 voucher holders to go to, because when the economy is good and, you know, rents are high, their opportunities become fewer because landlords want to take money, take revenue from a tenant who is not dependent upon, you know, government subsidy for their to pay their rent. In times like these, as Ron discussed earlier, you know, we got folks knocking on our door wanting to take our tenants who have vouchers because they know that's a guaranteed source of income. But this provides us an opportunity to provide more opportunities for those individuals when the market turns. So there's a lot of good. We need to educate them because when there are bills about the about housing authorities before the legislature, it's always in the negative. The first time I got involved in the legislative process, about the public housing authorities, they were, Jim Hargrove called me because there was a bill that would prohibit public housing authorities from engaging in advocacy. And that was because the state rep got mad at the Dallas Housing Authority. I was able to convince Governor Perry to veto that bill. And over the years, there's been bills like you requiring air conditioning for all units. That's a great idea, but where's the money going to come from? Because HUD didn't give you that money. You know, we, a couple of sessions ago, we had to deal with a bill about, you know, dangerous dogs. So every time we've been before the legislature, it's always been at a defensive posture. We've never really had a chance to write it, really tell our story. And so now, Tara, you're correct. This is the time before the legislative session to educate them on who we are, to make sure people know who we are before they start hearing other things. Because everything, anytime you read something in the newspaper about public housing authority, it's usually in a negative light. Seldom do they write puff articles about all the great things a public housing authority does that shows up in a Sunday newspaper. That just, you know, you see a few of those, but not very many. And so this is our opportunity to sort of define ourselves before we get defined by others who would like for us not to be involved in this business. And for us, you know, yeah, they, you know, you could say very easily, oh, we'll just take care of the folks in RAD and whatever housing vouchers we get, we'll just manage those. But that doesn't help the greater community because there's more need for housing than it is actual affordable housing on the ground. And, you know, the city is a partner. They want more affordable housing. The community at large wants more public housing. But and we do a good job of sort of helping maintain affordability and preserving affordability in this community. But if we don't have that opportunity, you have to ask, you know, what's the other player that would step up? And if they are have a more of a proprietary interest, I don't know that they will have the same interest in terms of keeping rents low. It'll be about, you know, making money and turning properties over as quickly as possible. And so I think the in my humble opinion, I think you may see an increase in the homelessness if some of this does pass, because if rents go up and people don't have a place to stay, you know, if you can't pay, landlords are simply going to be asking you to leave. So what we do is good. I think we've got to continue to make the case before the legislature. You know, TAP and everybody is involved. And I think this gives us an opportunity to really sort of coordinate, because last session, you know, the city testified in support of HB 21. We were opposed to it. You know, there were some other stuff at play. But this interim, thanks to Kate and Eric and others, they've been trying to get on the same page and coordinate with a lot of with the various parties to make sure we can have a united front when the legislature convenes in January. And again, Tara, you're right about meeting now, because I always tell my clients, if you just show up in January, you're showing up at the last act of the play, because everything else has already been done. you know, if you're averse to something, those folks who are on the offensive, they've done their work. They've identified who's going to carry their bills. They've drafted up the legislation. They're looking to get a committee hearing. And if you're showing up in January, you're showing up very late, and it's going to be very difficult to be effective. That's probably more than what you all wanted to hear, but
you'll be hearing more about it as we. Yeah, I think each month we'll continue to just update you on what's transpiring. But we're going to have some members of the legislature coming through, and we've talked to Cheryl Cole, who's volunteered to also help us host legislators as they come through, and so we'll be in touch. But it's exciting that people are thinking of us. We've also, I think you should also take comfort. You know, we developed a portfolio of 100 properties since over the last 20 years. I mean, Ron, when did you acquire the first properties?
The very first, 2004.
And then we really took off in about 2013, you know, 12, 13. It's been a handful a year. It's not been, and we're, you know, and very, very carefully choosing the deals that we're working through. So it's, you know, there's some rigor here. And consequently, we've had no foreclosures. We've had no finance issues with.
And no negative press.
You know, lots to work through here, but there's a story to be told, and we're working with others to try to tell that story. Katie Richardson's helping us prepare a lot of data in-house, and we're excited that HousingWorks is going to hopefully help us to maybe tell some of that story from an external perspective. Let me, if I can, stop us there, unless anyone has more questions about this, because I want to go into executive session so we can talk about some issues that involve more of a legal bent. Okay. Anything else on this side? Great. Then commissioners.
Thank you all for being here, and I don't expect you to stick around until we come out of executive session. So, you, Kelly.
Well, and some folks are going to stay. Ann's part of this, and our counsel Natalie's going to stay, and we need Suzanne and Ron. So the board may go into executive session, close this meeting to the public pursuant to 551.071 of the Texas Government Code for consultations with attorney regarding legal advice pending or contemplated litigation or a settlement offer. B, 551.072 of Texas Government Code for discussion about the purchase, exchange, lease, or value of real property. C, section 551.074 of the Texas Government Code to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of a public officer or employee, or to hear a complaint or charge against an employee or an officer. Or D, section 551.087 of the Government Code to discuss certain economic development negotiations. So we will go into executive session effective at 2:39. And I would ask, for those who,
Is there a motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? The motion carries, and the meeting is adjourned at 4:08 p.m.
Thank you
all for your assistance.
Happy birthday, Jim.